From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on October 4th, 2021, with the creation of Blue Sky, a social platform that looks a lot like Twitter. It has a light blue logo. It functions in basically the same way. And it's not the only one. Mastodon's another platform that was designed to kind of rival Twitter. There are more. Until recently, these alternative Twitters were stuck in a kind of social media mud, doing okay with numbers, but nothing close to the dominance of Elon Musk's platform. But then Blue Sky changed from an invitation-only platform and opened it up to anyone. And the last month has seen Blue Sky catch fire, doubling its user base to more than 24 million at this count. By comparison, Mastodon has around 9 million accounts, but only about 1 million are active. Twitter reports 400 million monthly active users worldwide. I don't know how many of those are bots, but apparently it's still pretty popular. Blue Sky is trying to carve into that dominance. It's young, without a huge staff, doesn't seem to have much of a revenue model yet. So why are people interested in a Twitter alternative? Last year, the New York Times' Ezra Klein said that Twitter is like smoking. We now know that it's bad for us. Some of us still do it anyway. Some quit. Blue Sky promises to be a more pleasant user experience, a healthier one. Twitter or X has become clogged with bots and anonymous angry trolls and even plenty of actual and quasi-porn. But Blue Sky is supposed to be a more pure experience of social media public square interaction, a thoughtful interaction, not toxic aggression. And yet Blue Sky has struggled to attract people from the political right. As a result, it's not exactly truth social for the left, but the Financial Times' Jemima Kelly wrote a column titled, "With Blue Sky, the social media echo chamber is back in vogue." Kelly wrote, quote, "Nobody on Blue Sky seems to actually mind that they are in an echo chamber. When I told a friend who happens to be an enthusiastic Blue Sky user what I was writing about this week, she replied, oh, yes, it is an echo chamber. That's what people like about it. It's lovely," end quote. Daniel Dresner is a political scientist and a prolific author and public commentator working for the Washington Post, among other outlets. He used to be a very frequent Twitter poster. He recently wrote on his Substack that he left Twitter a year ago, concluding that it had changed so much that it was unusable. Dresner wrote, quote, "I mourn what Musk has done to a site that, while imperfect, generated considerable utility compared to the flaming garbage fire that it is now," end quote. But he went on to say that the criticism of Blue Sky is fair, writing, quote, "There are almost no conservatives on Blue Sky, and the few that did try it out got dogpiled pretty quickly. I would like to think that I'm a pretty moderate in the U.S. political distribution, but on Blue Sky, I am barely to the left of Attila the Hun," end quote. And yet Dresner keys in on a different point. Blue Sky, he says, is much less toxic than Twitter or X. It's less aggressive, less automatically mean and angry or even weird and sexual. That difference, Dresner argues, is important. The question is, will Blue Sky become that angry, that mean, that vicious? Is it inevitable? And if the political right boycotts the platform, does that wreck its potential value? Can we create a public square on social media? Should we try? And can we make social media social again, not so anti-social? Three guests this hour. We'll bring a range of perspectives. In studio, first, let me welcome Emily Hesney Lynch, who is the owner and founder of Serve Me the Sky Digital, an adjunct professor of English and communication at Nazareth College, and marking 3 years since quitting Twitter, I think. Is that right?
That's right, Evan.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for being here. Scott Feibusch is a media consultant. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
And are you still on Twitter?
I have an account that I haven't closed there. I was looking
so
to see
you
the last time
you don't use it.
I was looking to see the last time I posted anything substantive, and it's been 8 months, 9 months.
Okay, so yeah. So you're effectively an inactive account there. Do you still have an account over there? Or you
deleted? No,
it?
Fully deleted.
Are you on Blue Sky, Scott Feibusch?
Very much so.
Okay, Emily Hesney Lynch, are you on Blue Sky?
No, not currently.
Okay, do you plan to be?
I'm not sure. I'm going to suss it out. We'll see.
Well, we have a lot to talk about this hour because, in my view, social media has become really, really corrosive. On a separate program coming up, we will talk about Australia, which just passed the first major high-profile country ban of social media for anyone under the age of 16. That's a big deal. That is a big one. And Australian legislators said there's just too much evidence that it's so bad for us and really, really bad for kids. So, on that note, is Blue Sky an answer here? Well, I mean, briefly, I'm going to give you the floor, and then we're going to bring in legislator Rachel Barnhart, who back when I was working for Channel 13, Rachel was there. She told the whole newsroom in 2009, You got to be on this. This is going to be the public square. Like, this is where people are going to get their information. And 15 years later, good God, and we're going to talk about what's changed with Rachel in a moment. But Blue Sky isn't an antidote to what we're talking about here?
I think it is.
You really do.
I am enjoying the heck out of it, especially seeing what has happened in the last few weeks because, you know, there's this thing called the network effect, right, where the more people who are on a particular network, the more valuable it becomes, and it's an exponential kind of thing. That network effect for Blue Sky has blossomed in the last couple of weeks since the election, as a lot of people have realized, okay, it's time to get off of what Twitter has become and find something else. I've been there for the last year wondering when everybody else would show up. It's great. We'll talk about some of the reasons why, especially this thing called a nuclear block.
B-L-O-C-K.
B-L-O-C-K. It's not a political thing. It's a way to make sure that the people who are there to make sure that you're not having a good time don't bother you anymore.
Well, okay, Scott Feibusch, but here's my counterpoint. Before I even created a Blue Sky account, which was last week I created one, because I'm like, I guess I better. I'm not sure I want to use it. But I had emails from listeners who were like, you're kind of mean on Blue Sky. There's already an impersonator. So if you search for at Evan Dawson on Blue Sky, that ain't me. At Evan Dawson 1 is me. It's just, I mean, like, really? Already? So I'm just getting cynical. I'm like, well, this is going to just go the same way. You don't feel that way.
I don't, because there are tools that exist on Blue Sky and there are motivations that exist on Blue Sky that are very different from the motivations on most of the social networks that we have just become beaten down by. We have learned, and this is not original to me, somebody was talking about this last night on Blue Sky, we have learned from our experiences on Facebook, on Instagram, on Threads, and especially now on X, that social media is a place to go to get argued at and to be made miserable and to have a lousy time. It doesn't have to be like that.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about that in our second half hour. Are you on other social sites, Emily?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and LinkedIn.
Okay.
But no Blue Sky.
What's the best experience for you?
I enjoy TikTok personally the most for just the type of content that I'm consuming and the communities that I've found there, but I know it's not necessarily for everyone.
And LinkedIn is still a thing.
It is. It's actually growing among millennials and Gen Z, which is interesting.
That's
the
what
vibes
I'm hearing.
Are different.
Yeah,
there.
That is very interesting. Okay. In general, do you think it is wise to warn especially kids, but all people, about the corrosive effects of social media?
I think that's certainly wise. I think most people are already aware of them and have probably experienced them.
Well, it doesn't make us stop.
Sure.
So,
but we'll talk about my kids, too, because they handle it differently than we do, I think.
I hope so, man. Listen.
It's interesting. And the students I have at Nazareth are 19 or 20 years old, and they've grown up with this. They were on Snapchat and Instagram in fourth grade is when they joined a lot of platforms, and it had such a different mental health impact for that generation than me as a millennial joining much later.
Do you think hearing about Australia's ban under 16, does that make sense to you?
No.
No?
No, I think social media exposes us to so much we might not have access to otherwise. Like, especially for queer kids, it can be a lifeline to information that they might not access otherwise. I think parents and good digital literacy and things like that would be more helpful than a flat-out ban.
Interesting. Okay, well, I want to bring in a voice of a local legislator who has used social media probably more than anybody else in local politics. As I mentioned, County Legislator Rachel Barnhart could not be on the program live today, but I had a chance to talk to her this morning about this, the rise of Blue Sky, the state of X, and where we go with both politics and journalism interacting with the public and why it's become so dark. This is part of our conversation this morning.
Thank you.
You were one of the first Twitter adopters, and it's hard to say this, but it was more than 15 years ago now.
That's right.
And, you know, so I want to start by asking you if you are a Blue Sky user now.
I am. I think it's very important to be where people are, and I wanted to check it out, so I've immersed myself into the Blue Sky world. I do have an account there.
We'll get to Blue Sky in a minute. Before we do, take me through what you think the Twitter experience or X experience has been over the past 15 years and how it has changed.
Sure. Well, at the time I joined Twitter, it was transformative for reporting. It used to be that we would, and you were my colleague back then, it used to be that you would put a story together one a day. You'd see it on television, and that was that. And maybe you could read it on the internet. But the advent of social media really changed the way that we not only disseminate information, sometimes in bits and pieces and in real time with audio and video, as well as just information, but it also changed the way we consume information as well. And Twitter was very special because it really became a public square, a place where people from all over the world gathered and shared information, engaged with each other, consumed information. And it really, the connections that I have forged over the last decade plus have been extremely important to shaping my worldview, as well as my ability to do my job first as a reporter and now as a county legislator.
You have said recently, though, that one of the changes, or at least the adaptations that you made over time, was that you very aggressively blocked and muted to the point where, you know, I mean, I go back to some of your use of Facebook, and I would read some of the comments on your public site, and it was just horrific. And then Twitter became basically that, where, you know, anywhere from 50 to 80% of responses to even the most mundane sort of tweet would be ugly, vicious, aggressive, mean, things I don't think people would say in person, sometimes misogynistic or worse. And you seem to create your own little formula for dealing with that.
Yes, I would say on every single social media platform, I have experienced pretty intense harassment. I had to call authorities more than once, and it can be a very scary place. However, believe it or not, I have found that I have been able to control my experience best on Twitter. That is because of their mute and block functions, and because I don't have to see or participate in things that I don't want to. And Twitter would not be usable for me if I didn't have those tools. Facebook, the tools are a little more limited because people can tag you on other pages, which can be a pretty hairy experience. So I actually do still think that Twitter does an okay job. Now, should they ban people who engage in some of this? Absolutely. Twitter does a terrible job. But I have to be honest with you, I don't think Facebook does a good job either. I don't think any of the platforms do a terrific job. In the United States, we have this thing called free speech, and I have found that the companies tend to err on the side of free speech. So, but that being said, I don't have to see anything I don't want to see. Unfortunately, people who follow me have given me feedback that it's difficult to engage with me on some of these platforms because they get attacked by some of these trolls. But I've identified about 200 of what I call the frequent flyers. And if you follow me, you can identify them quickly, too, and also take measures so you don't see them.
Well, you know, this is one of those parts of the conversation that makes me feel a little bit of despair in a couple of different directions. And I want to ask you about this. So first of all, I want to ask you if you think politics, I mean, obviously now you work in politics, you've been in media, if you think politics has been affected by the online discourse, because one of the refrains we heard for years was Twitter is not real life, Twitter is not real life. Well, it turns out that at least in my view, and maybe you disagree, that our political discourse has been significantly coarsened over the last 10 years, not just because of Donald Trump. I mean, I certainly think he's contributed to that. But I think the way that we communicate with each other in general on social is so aggressive. It's almost like the way we talk to people when we are driving a car alone and we talk to someone, we yell at people under our breath in the next lane as if they are the worst human beings in the world. And I think we do that on social. And my question is, does that end up actually trickling into political discourse, and has that made it harder to do politics well?
Well, I think there's still ways to participate in really healthy discourse on all the social media platforms. But yes, social media can be incredibly toxic. And we know that a lot of people are getting their information from social media, particularly younger people. That's where they get their news, so to speak. And so that does have a lot of implications for elections and for politics. But I still think that social media can be a very useful tool for figuring out what public reaction is. I mean, certainly I would not have understood a lot of the things going on if I wasn't on social media, if I wasn't exposed to the way other people think outside of my circle. So I find even when it's coarse, even when it's not nice, I still learn so much from what's going on and the reactions from other people. Certainly, I think I've had some misses in certain positions I've taken, but I've also had a lot of affirmation for certain things, which is I find those things very helpful. And I think that there's wisdom in the crowd and you learn from other people. But yes, overall, absolutely. But politics has never been for the faint of heart, Evan. It's always been a blood sport. It's always had elements that are very difficult.
I don't disagree with that. I just think I think we're at sort of a fork in the road culturally, because social media is still a very new tool to human beings. It feels tired now, but I mean, it's going to be around forever. We're not going back to a world where we don't have digital communication and we're reading newspapers in physical print every morning. I get that. But the fork in the road is either we start to look at the way we communicate with one another, whether it's on Insta or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, as, you know, we sort of culturally shun people who are know-it-all aggressive jerks, or that form of communication becomes dominant. And the problem is right now, the cultural right has won the current moment in the culture war. They are ascendant, for sure. The cultural left, which is also guilty of some really aggressive sort of mob online behavior, has lost the moment. So it's not just like, well, the right's aggressive and the left is nice on online. That's not how it is at all. But the cultural right is dominated by Aiden Ross and the Pauls and people like Elon Musk who elevate and promote really dark and aggressive voices. And that cultural ascendancy might make it permanent, that this is just how we communicate with one another. And I don't think that's healthy. Am I being too fatalistic?
I think you are a little bit. I think you're really reacting to something that we are seeing on the platform X, formerly Twitter, which is dealing with the algorithm. When Elon Musk acquired Twitter, there were a lot of changes, particularly to the algorithm. And the Wall Street Journal did a story essentially confirming they did a bunch of dummy accounts. And they confirmed that those accounts were fed right-wing material in the algorithm that people didn't even ask for, that weren't, you know, things that they didn't even profess a liking for or an inclination towards. They were still fed it in their feed. And so Elon Musk has absolutely juiced that algorithm to promote right-wing content. I don't see it. I mean, I have curated lists on Twitter. Some of them are public. Some of them are my own private lists of accounts that I value, that I commentary news reporters that I really want to continue to follow. And so I don't see the algorithm, but many other people did and were highly offended by it. And so they've departed Twitter. And I don't blame them. I do think it's incredibly unfortunate that Elon Musk did this and forced people to kind of make these decisions that this platform isn't for them because they don't want to be fed this content without their consent.
Yeah.
And so the algorithm is where it's at.
Well, I mean, not even just aggressive or certain ideologies, but there's outright porn in the responses on Twitter. Like what are we doing here? I can't believe.
Right. The bots, the controls over the spam, it's really fallen off under his ownership.
Yeah. But my general instinct is not to censor, not to ban, to hope that cultural and market forces, you know, not to be too neoliberal, but are going to weigh in and put a thumb on the scale better than censors do, because I think down censorship is a rough road. I just look at it and I go, if I can't look at this at work because there's literally porn in the replies on Twitter, it's not a usable site to me. So I just want to conclude then by asking about this alternative that my guests in studio are going to talk about this hour and, you know, with different views on how useful this could be. Blue Sky right now looks like the biggest competitor to Twitter. And by that, I mean it looks like Twitter. It functions like Twitter. Mastodon didn't really take off. It's still out there. There's others that have tried to sort of grab onto it. But Blue Sky looks a lot and feels a lot like Twitter, especially early Twitter. The problem is if the conservative right or whatever conservatism is right now, if it abandons it or if it boycotts it, it's not a public square. And is there utility in something that looks like Twitter, but in one entire part of the political discourse just boycotts?
Yeah, so my thoughts on Blue Sky are that it's a really wonderful platform, and not only just because of its user experience, but because of the promise that it's making to its users about the algorithm. We're not going to corrupt your algorithm, right? You control what you see here, and I think that's very important. But right now, Blue Sky has limited utility for someone like me who has built up all of these lists on Twitter of people that I want to follow. They're not over on Blue Sky. And I follow people from across the spectrum. So this idea that the left has left Twitter, I mean, a lot of people have for sure, but most people have not. Most people are still kind of where the action is. But Blue Sky is growing. And I am concerned that Blue Sky will have one ideological perspective. And by the way, I mean, even if you are a Democrat, I mean, there's plenty of perspectives within our tent that could still make it very interesting. But it's not the same. It's not the public square. But I don't think we can criticize people who left X for making that decision. We have to criticize Elon Musk, who created this problem, right? He's the problem here, not the people who left. He did not retain his customers. And so they went over to this greener pasture, so to speak. And it's a very nice experience where people, you know, say, listen, Rachel, I couldn't build community on Twitter anymore. I was really sick and tired of dealing with the trolls, with the spam, with the bots, and with the right-wing content every time I opened the app. And I get it. I mean, I think that's really fair and valid. And I think it just goes to how are you using the platform. I mean, for me, I use it to not only disseminate information about my work and my thoughts about things, but I also probably more than I use it to distribute information, I consume, and I like to engage. But for other people, they are just interested in having really healthy engagement, which for them is easier on Blue Sky. So I'm going to be in both places, but yeah, it's a lot more work if you care about being on multiple platforms and kind of being in places where people are and hearing what they have to say. It's a pain, but I think it's really important. And I think we're only beginning to figure this out. I would say one other thing that really concerns me about the whole Blue Sky X discourse right now is that Blue Sky has made promises to its users, well, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. Well, right now it also has no revenue model. And we know that the money is in our data. The money is in that algorithm. And so how long is that going to last? And what are the tests that we're using for these platforms? None of them are pure. Blue Sky is definitely the most pure for now. And I don't know where all this goes. And you know, it just seems like eventually we're all going to be picking from the lesser of the evils. But will we be able to duplicate the public square on Blue Sky? Right now, it hasn't happened. Do I hope it happens? Sure. But X still has the most utility for me.
That's Rachel Barnhart, Monroe County legislator from District Number 17, who joined me this morning. After we take this only break, we're going to come back with Emily Hesney Lynch, the owner and founder of Serve Me the Sky Digital and an adjunct professor of English and Communication at Nazareth College. Scott Feibusch, my colleague who's a media consultant here, will come right back and get your feedback this hour as well. What platforms are you still on or moving to or trying out? We're talking Blue Sky and more on Connections. A New York Times review of some of the highest-end restaurants in California and New York sparked outrage, not necessarily among diners, but among the celebrity chefs like Thomas Keller who own these places. They say that who cares about the critics or the mainstream media? We're going to talk about who has influence, who has power of critical voice, what's changing. That's Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, all right, Scott Feibusch, let me start with you. You heard Rachel Barnhart say, you know, her why she's skeptical of Blue Sky for the moment, that it cannot be a public square if it gets boycotted by the right, that she's over there, but she's not as sanguine as you are about it. What do you think?
I mean, none of these things are public squares, right? Everybody self-selects for where they're going to go. The number of people in the real world who were aware of what was going on in Twitter, even at its height, that was not the real world. That was a self-selected portion of people who were there for that particular kind of engagement and argument. And, you know, it's good to get a cross-section of what people are thinking. It's not going to give you everything. Neither is Blue Sky necessarily.
So we can't have a public square in social media? You don't think it's possible?
I don't think there's ever going to be, you know, as much as Musk talks about making X the everything app. No, I don't think there's going to be one spot where absolutely everybody is going to congregate. You know, for me, after leaving Twitter, where I had a fantastic, there was a wonderful rock Twitter community, you know, that was built up here. We had picnics. I saw Mona was in the other room there a minute ago, and, you know, we'd have picnics up in Ontario Beach Park, and she'd bring the grandkids, and it was great. And that whole community just, you know, fled to the four corners as Twitter started going downhill. No, I mean, you find a community. Where is the one bar where everybody in Rochester goes? Where is the one venue where everybody goes for entertainment? There isn't one.
Okay, public square is a myth, according to Scott, in some ways here.
Some of us go to the Little Theater. Some of us go to Tinseltown. You know, not everybody is going to be everywhere, so you find the experience that is most enjoyable for you. And yeah. That's the big thing about Blue Sky is that for many of us, it's actually enjoyable again.
Everybody should be going to the Little Theater. Anyway, Emily Hesney Lynch, what did you hear from the legislator there? Did anything move you toward or against Blue Sky? Because you're not on Blue Sky yet. Anything change your mind about that decision?
No, I think a lot of what Rachel said resonated in terms of the importance of a block feature and curiosity about Blue Sky not having any kind of sustainability financially if they're not going to do ads and they're not selling data, allegedly. I don't know. I'm curious where Blue Sky will go, but nothing really convinced me to join or not join right now.
Okay, so let me ask you both about that latter point. Rachel's correct to say that right now, far as we know, Blue Sky doesn't have a revenue model. And when you go from 8 million accounts to 25 million in a month, or whatever the number is, and who knows where they're going to be in a month from now or 6 months from now, all of a sudden, you need a bigger staff. And probably, I mean, just to moderate, I would think. And you got to find a way to pay people. Is it possible, Emily, to maintain a social platform like this that says, we're not going to do ads, we are not going to mine your data, we're not going to sell your data, and we're going to try to keep this experience pure? Can you do that while the scale grows, or do you think that collapses?
I think they just have venture funding right now, so I'm not sure how long that will last them. And I think they definitely need to, I saw they were scaling up content moderation, they were getting four times as many content moderators on the team, I believe. And I don't know how you pay for that. And I don't know why we should believe a company when they say we have no intention of doing ads. We have no intention of... Plenty of social media companies in the past have had good intentions and gone in a bad direction. So okay. I don't trust them.
Well, do you trust them, Scott Feibusch?
I do. And there are also reasons...
Anything you don't like about them?
No. I was going to say there are reasons why, even if you don't trust this company specifically... And I'm going to get geeky here for a second. It's my thing. It's built on an open protocol, right? So everything that happens within Twitter or within Facebook stays within that universe that is completely controlled by Musk or by Zuckerberg or by whoever, right? What happens on Blue Sky is actually happening on something called Activity Protocol. And I promise I'm not going to dig deep into that. But the beauty of it is, you can create other systems that can interact with that data. So if you decide that the Blue Sky company has gone off in a direction that you don't like them going into, and they may, I mean, they've been talking about adding some sort of premium features, some sort of subscription model, not that's mandatory, but just, hey, you know, if you want to be able to post longer videos, if you want to be able to put additional icons in your display name or whatever, you can give us a few bucks a month to be able to do that. If you don't like that, you will still be able to interact with all of that content on other platforms that other people can develop that will interlink with this. Kind of the same way right now that if your email is through AOL, and you decide you don't like AOL, you can go over and you can get a FrontierNet account and still be able to email everybody that you've been emailing from your AOL account. It's a much more open ecosystem.
I'm going to pretend like I understand everything you just said. But why can't that be corrupted? Emily's right. We've heard a lot of promises that
everything
Mark Zuckerberg has... how many different times has he told you that he's not there to just steal your data and Facebook's not listening to you? And the fact that Facebook put a pizza ad doesn't mean that they were actually listening to your conversation.
Everything can be corrupted. And believe me, if you are on Blue Sky right now, you will see the people who are there very much trying to corrupt it. All of the same bad actors go to whatever platform they think they can find an audience on. And so I'm finding myself getting followed by random people who claim to be scantily dressed women from Eastern Europe and lottery winners and whatnot. What happens, though, with Blue Sky that I like, and it's kind of the same thing that Rachel did. You know, Rachel, because she is and has always been a very active social media user, and I go back with her to the days when we were working in a newsroom that didn't have computers. That's how far back we go. But, you know, she has done the thing that is very hard to do and very time-consuming on Twitter, which is to create all of those filters for yourself. On an open protocol like Blue Sky, you can subscribe to people who have already done that work for you. And so there are lists out there.
Is this the nuclear block you're talking about?
This is related to nuclear block. So you can go to lists and you can say, okay, you know, here is a list that I can subscribe to where somebody is just keeping track of all of these fake lottery winner accounts. And you subscribe to this list. They keep adding these accounts to them. If you trust this person, all of those accounts will disappear for you as long as you're subscribed to that list for blocking. And here's how blocking works. Let's get into this nuclear block, right? The problem that Rachel had, that's a very real one with Twitter, is that even if I block you from my feed, somebody else looking at my feed can still do what's called dogpiling. They can quote tweet me. They can answer my stuff. And my followers will still see them unless they block that person. And Blue Sky and Activity Protocol were designed to do something different. They were designed with this, quote, nuclear block, unquote, that just makes this annoying presence disappear. And so if I block you, all of a sudden my followers don't see your responses
to
me.
Okay, so that's what you mean. So if you block somebody, now the people following you don't see the responses to.
Right.
Okay.
This person, if I set it up this way, cannot, quote, tweet me.
Okay.
And dogpile me that way, I cease to exist for them the same way that they cease to exist for me. And so
I like that better.
This is what makes it work so far, is that it just takes so much of that oxygen away from the trolls. You know, if you think about it, especially on Twitter right now, it is designed to give trolls oxygen because the way that it works, if you pay Elon Musk the $8 a month or whatever for the silly little blue check, all of a sudden, you rise to the top of everybody's feeds, whether they want you there or not. And all of a sudden, there is a value. You get paid in some cases for the amount of engagement you generate, whether it's good or bad. And so there is this perverse economic incentive to create bad engagement just for the sake of creating engagement. You take that oxygen away on a system like Blue Sky, there's much. It's not fun for them.
Yeah, I appreciate that more. Is that compelling to you, Emily? Does that make you think, well, at least it's a better system?
Well, my counterpoint to that would be, can't they just create endless accounts and keep trolling you and you have to keep finding them and blocking them? It doesn't get rid of the impulse for people to do that.
It can. I think that there's still, you know, as they ramp up and they're working, they did this all with 20 people on staff. 20 people. And so, I mean, they're going to find ways. I think this is probably a good application ultimately for AI, is to identify some of these traits and be able to just preemptively block them. But people so far are really good because there's a belief in this community, right? And because people want this community to be fun, people are putting in that effort kind of for the community to create some of these lists. And so far, at least, to maintain them. I don't know if it's going to scale. I really don't. And I think the question will be, you know, what incentive will there be for these trolls to keep doing what they're doing?
Emily, do you agree with Scott that there was a time when Rock Twitter was a positive place, that you could meet people you hadn't met before, interact in positive ways, even meet in real life, develop real relationships, get something valuable? Yes?
Sure. Yeah, I had a great network through Rock Twitter, and it resulted in a lot of connections that became friendships.
When did that really fall apart for you?
2021 is when I left, but for 6 months or to a year before that, probably I felt things declining and toxicity increasing, and things like Scott was talking about, like quote tweeting and dogpiling on people and that kind of thing, had become immersed in the culture even before Elon took over.
Okay. And so I view that as extremely antisocial. I view myself as a lesser version of myself on these sites. Like, I don't like who I become sometimes. And you heard me mention it to Rachel, but to Legislator Barnhart in the conversation. But the way I view it is, the longer I spend on those sites, the more I start talking to people I don't know online, the way I talk to people when I'm driving, the way I'm like, why did I just flick off that person? What did they do to me? They didn't turn fast enough? Like, we are not good people when we are driving. And we become that way with social media. And I don't like myself. So I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time on Blue Sky. I'm listening to Scott's selling me hard. I mean, I've got an account. I don't know.
It's a different culture. It's a culture, you know, you can call it an echo chamber. The way that I like to think of it is, you know, when you go to hang out somewhere at night, do you go to some place where you know that you're going to run into people you don't want to see, listen to music you don't want to hear, eat food that you hate? Or do you go to the places where you're with people that you're going to like and have a good time and enjoy the night?
But they're
not going to
challenge you intellectually.
Not necessarily. It's a different kind of intellectual challenge.
Okay. I mean, Scott's either right or he's selling me like an $85 lavender therapy necklace.
And I'm
like
hopeful about it. I mean, I'll be honest, after being beaten down
like
myself.
Is Blue Sky the therapy necklace that they told our dog she needed because she was depressed? Like, what are we doing here?
After being beaten down by social media for so long, I'm enjoying this.
It's interesting what you were saying, Scott, about the culture and community trying to weed out the bad actors proactively, because I think that can be dangerous. It's subjective who is a bad actor.
Exactly.
And if there's a culture saying, oh, you can't say this, you can't say that, but there's no clear line. Like, if it's hate speech or harassment or something like that, that's a much clearer line than the whole community being like, oh, you're mean to so-and-so, and we're all going to nuclear block you, you know? It doesn't really create a community.
There's been a little bit of that. I mean, it's had growing pains, absolutely. But there's been kind of this interesting consensus that has developed. I think part of it, you know, stems from, and there's this phrase that gets thrown around, Blue Sky Elder, which is really kind of a joking phrase for people who were around when you needed an invitation code to get in. And so it self-selected a little bit at the beginning with people who were, you know, trying to be careful about, hey, I'm only going to hand out these invitation codes to people who I think want to build the same kind of community.
Okay. I'm torn. I have to say I'm torn. And Emily, you know, one of the things that I'm really trying not to be cynical about is the idea that social media can even still be social, that it doesn't inevitably become anti-social. It's why I asked you what you're still on, because you left Twitter. It is not a healthy place for most people mentally. How do you make social media more social and not so antisocial?
I do wonder if social media is becoming a misnomer, because I don't know if people want these platforms to be social even. I think most people come to them for education or entertainment, the two main things we look for. And you don't have to be entertained by people you know in real life. You can be entertained by strangers, and you don't even have to engage with them or be their friend. You can just watch their content and find them funny. So it is an interesting kind of existential question of what people want when we're getting online and looking to connect.
So you're saying the question, how do you make social media more social, misses the point of what social is, and it's just not
that
thing.
It's always evolving. Yeah, I don't know if it is truly social anymore.
Well, I want to listen to a comment made by somebody else who left Twitter about a year ago, and that is the neuroscientist Sam Harris, who he was a pretty frequent poster, and he has he was featured in a group of people that in 2018 that Barry Weiss of the New York Times called the intellectual dark web. And he was tight with a lot of people who he now finds kind of repellent. And so this is what he had to say about what has happened to Elon Musk and what happens to the human brain on Twitter.
He felt he needed to buy the platform. And now he has this you know, free speech evangelist gloss on what he's up to. But really what he's up to is, you know, snorting ketamine and tweeting at all hours of the day and night, right? And that this is his influence on our politics. That it's, you know,
sounds like there's a lot of ketamine in the White House. I keep hearing about ketamine.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I mean, one hopes he's mitigated it of late, but it's...
That's definitely not the clip I would have used, just because I don't know that he actually snorts ketamine. I apologize for that. And I don't know if Elon Musk even talked about that. The point is, what Sam Harris said at the beginning of the clip was, he views Elon Musk as someone who's just the perfect example of what Twitter addiction or social media addiction does to people, which is, here's this really interesting thinker who is in tech spaces, who's trying to go to Mars, who's trying to create brain implants that will change the way we communicate, that is making self-driving cars. I realize Elon Musk himself didn't do all those things, but he is fueling a lot of the direction of where tech is taking us. Whether you think that's positive or negative, he's doing interesting things. And then all of a sudden, what happens when he starts spending 12 hours a day on Twitter? Well, he drops those projects. He goes to Pennsylvania to try to win it for Trump and starts dancing around on stage next to Donald Trump. And he basically reposts conspiracy theories all day. So bizarre behavior. And Harris is saying the worst use of his possible time, the worst possible use of Elon Musk's time, is 12 hours a day on Twitter. And he is totally addicted. And that is what he has done. And it's derailed an interesting scientific career. And I don't think that that's wrong. I think that, and I think I am guilty of anybody as occasionally being too addicted to the feeds and things like that. And do you miss it at all? What did you find yourself feeling when you moved away from it?
I took a 3-month break before I left Twitter, and I was surprised. Initially, there were things I'd be driving around like, oh, I should tweet this, or this is a funny thing to tweet. And after a few months, that started to go away, and I didn't feel the impulse to just put every thought on the internet, and it forced me to be a lot more thoughtful before I put anything online, which I think is a good thing for most people.
Definitely. I mean, like, pull back for a second. You don't have to respond to everything. Not everything has to be a spark to anger. And this is where Scott's going to be like, and on Blue Sky, we don't do that. We don't have anybody who's angry.
No, actually, what I was going to say about that is that it's fascinating watching my kids, who are 21 and 16, to see how they handle this, because, you know, having grown up seeing mom and dad putting all of this stuff out there initially on Facebook and then later on Twitter and Blue Sky and wherever, from at least what they let me see of their interactions with social media, whatever they're putting out there has very little to do with who they are in the real world. My daughter is very involved in various fandom communities of watching anime stuff that I don't even pretend to understand. And that's mostly, she just joined Blue Sky, and that's mostly who she's following, what she's posting about. I know in the real world from talking to her that she's very interested in issues of politics and all of this. That's not where she goes on social media at all. And my son is mostly on Roblox and building stuff there and in Minecraft, as best I can tell, and does not interact under his own name. We're very careful about that. Those communities are fairly protective of all of that. But it's a very different generational outlook, and I wouldn't dare to say that my kids' experience is anything like universal, but I am somewhat happy to see that they're using it that way.
Patrick writes to say the French came out with Be Real, a no-filters picture app, kind of an anti-Instagram. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Be Real is basically
saying, traction for a hot second, but it already kind of flopped.
Why do you think it flopped?
I think other apps started copying it. Instagram and TikTok both added a similar feature, but it's already kind of dead.
Okay. What's the appeal of the idea, Emily, of Be Real? Is it, to me, what that says is we are way too filtered, airbrushed, and desperately trying to present an image of ourselves that isn't always authentic, and that's not healthy. Therefore, our app will just be real, and that's healthier. And it goes nowhere. It flops in about a month. Why? So what do you see as what's compelling about that? Is the idea compelling to you?
I think some people do still want that candidness or authenticity, and it's hard to find the right way to go about it. But some of my students have actually been looking at smaller Instagram accounts and creating just like only 40 or 50 people can follow me, friends and family, and I'm just going to do like photo dumps, totally unedited, casual pictures, and it takes the pressure off and is a lot better for their mental health. So I think options like that where you can be a little more real and not have to feel like the whole world is watching can be helpful.
What do you think, Scott Feibisch?
I think everybody needs these niches. I mean, in addition to being on the big fire hoses of stuff like Blue Sky, you know, I help to moderate a community that is entirely just talking about radio. And it's a very small community where people will interact with each other in very different ways probably than they will on sites. It gets back to my thesis that there is no one universal town square. And honestly, if you had to be, this is one of the things that social media has done to us. Nobody wants to be exposed to everything that 350 million Americans are thinking all at once. You can't. Your head would explode.
Well, I mean, Christine writes to me on Twitter, says, see, look, I've still got the Twitter app on my phone. I didn't even have a Blue Sky app on my phone. So I have no idea what's going on in Blue Sky right now. But on Twitter or on X, Christine says, you seem to be doing a lot of whining about X today. It's very easy to deactivate. Thank you, Christine. That's nice.
Evan, it's okay to leave. You can leave. I wrote a blog post called You Have My Permission to Leave Twitter, and it has surged in views since the election. Hundreds of views. And it's from months and months ago. So I think a lot of people are really considering leaving, as you pointed out earlier. It's okay. You can go.
You can go.
The only reason why I keep an account there is I don't want anybody doing what happened to you and camping on my brand name.
Yeah, but then you got to do that on every platform, Scott. I don't have...
I don't this care is one of the, who's doing it on MySpace or on...
I don't really care. MySpace. That's interesting. No, no, this is something that Sam Harris talked about in the interview. He said he was hesitant to leave Twitter, to Emily's point. He was hesitant because he would get dogpiled. People would say nasty things about him. And he felt like he had to respond to every troll, every aggressive, angry person who was, he thought, acting in bad faith or being wrong on the internet. And he said now he has no idea what people are saying about him. He does not care. It does not affect his life in any meaningful way. It doesn't affect his relationship with his children. It doesn't affect his work. And he said, I just left it all behind. He said, I'm sure people are saying terrible things. Elon Musk himself is saying terrible things about Sam Harris. So, yes, millions of people probably are seeing that and then dogpiling. He says, who cares? It doesn't matter. So I'm kind of with him there. Like, go ahead. Make a Blue Sky Evan Dawson parody account. Go for it. Whatever. I mean, like, I have a sense. I think I know who that is anyway. But regardless, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Go for it. People are like, oh, they're posing as you. I'm like, okay. So, I mean, I don't know that I need to invest that much time. So, you dissuade me.
There are a lot of ways to argue that. I mean, in my case, you know, my name is also my business name, and I have to protect that to that, some extent.
No, and, that's interesting.
And that,
that's
by the fair. Way, this also gets to the question of how do you know who is real? And this has been a problem on Blue Sky, because if you remember, you know, Twitter, the original purpose of those blue checks on Twitter back in the day, they didn't cost anything. They said, hey, this person, you know, if you're looking at Mark Hamill's account, we verified this is really Mark Hamill and not somebody pretending to be Mark Hamill. And he's so much fun to follow, by the way. If you're not following Mark Hamill, you should follow Mark Hamill. That then got completely turned around when Musk said, no, anybody can pay for this and whatever. So on Blue Sky, the way that they do it is if you have your own domain name, so I own phibush.com, and you can very easily set up within your web hosting and what's called your DNS record something that will point back to Blue Sky so that my Blue Sky name is actually phibush.com. And as long as you know that I'm the guy who has phibush.com, you know the phibush.com account is me. It's easy enough. Like I mentioned, we could go downstairs to Christy and in 5 minutes have you set up so that you're evandawson.wxxi.org. And then boom, there's no question.
Jack says, let me pull this email back up. Part of the problem is that everyone feels like they have to have an opinion now. That's what they've been taught by social media. How do we get people to see things differently about that? So, Jack, I want to close the hour on this point that Jack's making. I don't want to take people's voice away. You want to have an opinion? Go for it. Mark Andreessen, who is one of the big tech guys who is advising Donald Trump now, who has been sort of famously predicting things and famously right about things, and was a big Trump supporter, he says that AI is going to make our lives very different. It's going to make legal, medical, all kinds of needs cheaper. We're going to have more free time. We'll be working less. But what will be dominating in terms of what is a big moneymaker is personal brand, he said. And that's already true. Both of our guests work with people and work with companies about what their brands are. Andreessen says it's going to be that to the extreme in the future. And it's all about individuals. Who is the loudest, most public brand? So it's Aiden Ross, Logan Paul, Jake Paul. You know, the people who are maybe not the people that I would want my son to grow up to be like are already getting $100 million contracts, getting whatever they want, getting access to the president incoming. And Andreessen says, that's future. Just raise kids on that. I don't want to raise my kids on that. That's crazy to me. That be the loudest personal brand. What if you're an introvert? What if you don't want to be? I guess you're just out of the future economy. I'm worried about that. Are you worried about that?
To some extent, yeah. I think being loud is not the answer. You don't have to have an opinion about everything. That's something that I've had to learn over time. And that's something that's bothered me on Instagram over time, too. Everyone sharing the same infographic when the same current events are going on in a performative way to show that you have the right opinion about a certain topic. You don't have to weigh in on things you don't know about, and that's completely fine. But I think living in a capitalist society, being loud and having a personal brand is needed at times to earn money and make your way through the world, unfortunately.
So maybe, in our final 30 seconds, maybe if Blue Sky works, that actually resets the culture of what social media is supposed to be, and maybe we don't go down that dark road.
There is a little bit of cultural pushback there against some of these big thinker accounts that have been, you know, kind of wrong about a lot of stuff lately. And so there has been this sort of cultural pushback on Blue Sky against some of them, and some other voices are getting elevated. One thing, just to get back to what Emily was saying at the beginning, a lot of the growth of Blue Sky early on, it was a great, safe community for queer people, for trans people, and has remained that way. And that's fantastic. Some of the biggest voices there are from that community, and I love that about it.
You're going to stay on Blue Sky.
You got it.
Scott Feibusch is on Blue Sky. What's your handle on there?
Feibusch.com.
On Blue Sky?
At Feibusch.com, yeah.
Okay. See? Branding.
Unquestionably me. Nobody can fake me.
I'm just not built for the future, I guess. Emily Heston Lynch, maybe, maybe not in the future on Blue Sky.
Yeah, probably not, but probably not. We'll see.
Okay. But for now, still on TikTok, still on places, platforms that you feel give you positive value.
Yes.
And don't bring your life down into a toxic swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Everyone's going to find a different speed for them. Thank you for being here.
Of course.
Scott Feibusch, nice to see you.
Good to be back.
And listeners, whatever platform you're listening to us on, I just want you to know that we're grateful for it. Thanks for being with us. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.